Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will, and I'm here with my two friends.
My name is Ant.
That was Ant. He's one of my two friends. And Anna.
My name is Ant.
No, and wait, no, I thought we changed up season two, totally different season. You weren't introducing us anymore. We're going to introduce ourselves.
Well, yeah, but we haven't updated the script, and Will can only read what's on, he's the, like Anchorman. On the prompter.
Yes, okay, fine. Yeah. Sorry for disturbing the flow.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
This week, we're talking about the year 1841. Now, let's give our three-word previews, please, of what we're discussing today. Anna.
Bookkeeper murder mystery.
Bookkeeper?
Bookkeeper.
Murder mystery.
Yeah. Good.
Okay,
there's a lot of syllables, though. I don't like the syllable-to-word ratio, I know. I'm not going to lie.
As I was saying it, I thought, this is a lot. Bookkeeper, famously, triple letters in a row.
You have exhausted the seven-syllable limit, I'm afraid.
Okay, bookie murder mystery.
Very good. And
Lads on Tour.
Lads on Tour, three syllables, perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for.
I don't like to use more syllables than I need to.
And mine is Talking Over Democracy.
Oh.
That's right.
I can't wait.
Here we go. This week, I'm going to talk about the filibuster.
Philip Buster?
Mr. Philip Buster.
I love that
Mr. P. Buster. Mr. Philip Buster. He was actually a doctor. He was a PhD.
Dr. Philip Buster.
Dr. Philip Buster. His famous brother, Dust. Great laugh.
That's right, yeah.
And their nephew Ghost.
I'm desperately searching for another one. Desperately. I've never wanted to know another thing.
Their cousins with a different surname, Steak.
What?
The Philly Steak.
But they have the same first name.
Yeah, it's a family name.
So, what is a Philly steak? Is their middle name Cheese?
Yeah.
Or is it a hyphenated name?
Oh, wow.
No, because the steak's the surname. Cheese is the middle name.
Obviously.
And Philly is the first name, but it's a family name. It's used commonly amongst the family.
Yeah,
Philly
Cheese
steak.
Yeah.
The filibuster is a political procedure in which one or more members of a legislative body, like a parliament or a congress, try to prolong a debate on potential legislation to delay or even to try and completely prevent a decision. So that's what a filibuster is. And it's sometimes talked about or referred to as, quote, talking a bill to death, unquote, or talking out a bill.
Okay.
And it's basically a form of, like, it's a way to obstruct someone passing a law in a legislative body.
Does it exist in places other than America?
you are about to learn lots about this topic.
I'm excited.
Because it is affected enormously by the rules in the chamber.
In the chamber and of
secrets. And unsurprisingly, as we will come to, it turns out the US's rules... Basically, US democracy is a complete joke.
Yeah,
and
no argument here.
Well, not a complete joke, but it's...
I mean, I've heard it described as the worst export from the US is their actual democratic system.
Yeah. Ugh, who has bought that?
Loads of countries have.
I guess the ones we sort of invaded.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
The ones we spread democracy to.
So the term filibuster comes from the Dutch.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Is it from Vrijbooter? Is it from a freebooter, a pirate?
That is correct.
Yes.
What?
Which is a Dutch term.
How do you know that? How do you know ancient Dutch?
Because she's become.
I just hate
the
being
term
like
filibusters.
The
bang on the sort
podcast.
Of thing Anna would have looked up in detail.
Yeah,
it's true. I'm pretty sure it's in the Stackhouse filibuster episode of The West Wing. I think CJ describes the etymology.
I have seen The West Wing, so therefore I do feel as smart as you.
Yeah.
And this means, as Anna correctly says, this is the term freebooter, the Dutch for freebooter, which was a pillaging or plundering adventurer. And the precise history of how the word was borrowed into English is a bit obscure, but the Oxford English Dictionary finds that the only known use in early modern English is in a 1587 book describing filibooters who robbed supply convoys. So 1587, we see a version of the word in English of some kind. And in the late 18th century, so as late as that, then the term was then reborrowed separately into English from its French form, filibustier, a term
which is
a filibustier is a very nice piece of lingerie. Yeah.
It's a well endowed lady in France, I think. Filibustier.
It's the French. That's
the
French
lady of the
branch
night.
Of the family.
filibustier steak.
Steak, cheese steak.
Philly fromage, obviously, yeah.
And then it was used in that form until the mid-19th century. And then the modern English form, filibuster, was borrowed again in the early 1850s from the Spanish, filibustero, which means lawless plunderer. And the term was then basically grew in prominence in America, having been stolen from the Spanish. From that branch, so there was the word came backwards and forwards into the English language, but when it was applied to to political obstruction, it only started happening in the States after it had been brought in from the Spanish filibustero in the 19th century.
But largely always a negative thing.
Yeah.
So it's never always, like, awesome dude.
No. So it's always meant like lawless plunderer, pillager person. And then it had this very specific political obstruction meaning in America, taken from the Spanish in the 19th century. So the etymology is just quite interesting. So I thought I'd do a bit on it. There you go. That's the bit. It's done now.
Yeah, done. Tick.
Good. Not to get too political, but do you think it's a good idea that people can filibuster? Is it a good mechanic? Mm. Like, it feels a bit glitchy to me. Like, if this was in a video game, which is, like, more my remit, I just think it would be a bit OP, basically. Yeah.
Boring video game.
Well, I think it's very controversial. Yeah. So there are many people who think it's a legitimate political tool.
Yeah.
And there are many people who think it's an... abhorrence. I think make your own mind up. So I'll talk a little bit about the history of the term,
please.
And then you can make your own mind up.
I want to.
So, okay, can anyone guess who the first known practitioner of filibustering was?
Dr. Seuss.
Imelda Marcos.
Dr. Seuss, Imelda Marcos, and real guesses.
George Washington.
Yeah, 1840. Franklin Pierce. No, he's after that.
So by which I mean the first known practitioner of someone who is trying to talk out a debate.
Yeah, it's going to be
a political debate in a legislative body.
I don't know, Hamilton.
Henry VIII.
Rapping for
Henry
VIII.
Hours. Hamilton. No, so the first known example was Cato the Younger in the Roman Senate.
Okay. Fine.
Right, of course.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Someone, Greek, good.
No.
They're all the same.
Okay, so in debates over legislation he especially opposed, he would obstruct everything by speaking continuously until nightfall. And then this is where the rules of the chamber really, really matter in how democracy is expressed, right? So in the Roman Senate at the time had a rule requiring all business to be concluded by dusk. And so if you could just speak beyond dusk, it works every single time.
This is exactly how I used to date people. I would just talk at them until dusk.
And then they'd be like, fine, it worked. Yeah.
And then they would have to conclude all business.
They would have to conclude all business, exactly.
And you didn't see a lot of filibustiers.
And nothing was enacted.
It's a very classic, do you have any brothers and sisters? And then just go on a complete tirade for the next 6 hours.
So in the modern world, how filibustering is used depends on the rules. So both houses of the Australian Parliament, for example, have strict rules that enforce
kangaroo house and emu house.
That is
wow.
It's their national animals.
Offensive.
It's not racist
to our 8 Australian listeners. but they have rules enforcing how long members can speak. So that's which is, by the way, very sensible. It makes democracy work really well.
Yeah.
Take note, the U.S. Senate, that means that filibusters are basically not possible. But then in other places work differently. So for instance, in 2014, the Irish Justice Minister Alan Shatter performed a filibuster in which he was perceived to, quote, drone on and on. And so this was termed a, quote, drone attack. Little Irish joke.
Yep.
There from the Irish Parliament. And then in the UK in Parliament.
I didn't know it was an Irish thing at all.
Well, yeah, so it turns out there's space within the rules to be able to talk to filibuster. So in the UK Parliament, a bill defeated by filibustering is said to have been talked out, and the procedures in the Commons are such that you can filibuster, but you must talk directly to things that are germane to the topic under consideration.
Yeah. Okay.
So it makes it a lot harder.
Start reading like random cookbook.
You can't just go read a cookbook, and it makes it a lot harder to sustain. So there've been some interesting examples in the UK Parliament. So in 1983, a Labour MP called John Golding talked for over 11 hours during an all-night sitting at the committee stage of the British Telecommunications Bill. But that was, fortunately, it was in a standing committee, so he wasn't in the Commons, so he could take breaks to go and eat and things. So that's how he got to 11 hours. And then in January 2011, Labour peers, including John Prescott, who was amongst Labour peers, the former Deputy Prime Minister in the UK, they were attempting to delay the passage of the Parliamentary Voting System Bill that was going through, and they wanted to delay it until a certain date, which was the deadline given by the Electoral Commission. So they knew that if they met this date, then it would stop the referendum on the alternative vote, which we then had. We had in the UK, we did have a referendum on the alternative, changing the voting system, which we didn't do. But then on the 8th day of the debate, this is in the House of Lords, in the 8th day of the debate, then the staff had to come in and set up camp beds and refreshments to allow the peers to rest. Which for the first time they've ever done that in like 8 years since 2003.
It's like absolutely nuts that like you can sort of derail the whole system by just talking randomly. Yeah. Like I'm all for like, you know, countering an idea or like having sort of a different view, but like arguing on the basis of merit and like, but just basically I'm not getting my way and therefore I'm going to like trick the system so that, you know, like you
Except
can't get
yours.
Except it's
cool when it's for the side that you care about, right? The very famous Wendy Davis filibuster against extremely restrictive abortion laws in Texas. Like everyone loved that because she was standing up against a bill that she thought was wrong, right?
I mean, for every good case is a bad case.
Apart from all the people who disagreed with that
exactly.
position.
Yeah. It just depends whose side you're on.
If you believe
right?
in strict democracy, which I do, or slash totalitarianism, but that's a separate problem. But like, you know, like it should be the basis of what the people want.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's a great plot device. I'll tell you that. It
is
comes
a great
up in a
plot
lot
device.
Of movies
yeah,
and
yeah,
TV
yeah.
shows.
So in the US though, it's like to talk to all this. So as with so many things, the rules are just completely crazy, basically. So it means that filibustering is a tool that can be really, really easily used. So Senate rules permit a senator to speak for as long as they want to on any topic they choose to, unless, quote, 3/5 of the senators duly chosen and sworn bring about the end of the debate by invoking closure under some of the Senate rules. So basically 3/5 of all senators have to gather together to stop a filibuster.
Yeah.
So it's just a complete nightmare. And so it's a really, really powerful tool specifically in the US Senate compared with almost any other body in the rest of the world.
It's like a thing in the Senate where now they don't even have to physically get up and do the thing. They just say, we're filibustering, right? Because of the 60, because there's never a 60 seat.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So they don't even have to go to the standing up and reading the things. Okay. They just say, like, we're filibustering this, and then it's done.
Yeah, exactly. Completely. So, yeah, so
it's very stupid. If you don't even have to put in the effort of standing on your feet for 24 hours and reading the Bible
and, like,
or whatever.
And having that sort of, like, moment where, like, oh, he's about to drop, but if he drops now, get him some water or
something
like that.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's very stupid, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and this is where people, you know, in America, as in so many ways, there are lots of people who defend it as being, quote, the soul of the Senate, is like, the, you know, unquote. But in reality, it is definitely not what most voters want to see happening in a functioning, like, legislative body. It is completely mad, in my view.
Unless somebody stands up and does, like, a really cool one-man show with, like, juggling or something. Like, I would love it if they put a little panache into it.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there should be, like, some, like, song and dance requirement.
Or, like, fire sticks.
So there you go. So that's the filibuster. It is a complete and utter insult to democracy, in my view.
I have one question.
Yeah.
Why 1841?
That's a great question. That is such a good and relevant question.
or did we change the format of the show?
No, I think he's filibustering us.
Silently.
So in 1841, was the first example in the US of the filibuster being used to try legislation. So I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. We may have just let the whole thing sail by.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
nary a mention.
Honestly, at this stage, my brain has been, like, Will has conditioned me to knowing that he's not going to follow the rules. And I just accept it as written. And I just didn't even question that for a second. Good.
Yeah, next week he'll be talking about the Senate Oversight Committee when we talk about 752 BC.
Okay, lads on tour. So, this is going to be a deep, dark, sorrowed affair that we're talking into. No, I'm just clickbaiting you on this. In the annals of travel history, few names shine as brightly as that of Thomas Cook. Have you heard of him?
Is that the travel agency?
It's a travel agency. Okay. We'll come on to it.
Okay.
So, born in 1808 in Melbourne, in Derbyshire. not Melbourne, Australia.
Okay.
So Cook, this chap, he began his life as a cabinet maker and later found his calling as a Baptist preacher.
Oh, okay.
And so very humble origins, very humble beginnings, and seems far removed from the glitz and glam of jet-setting holidays that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
But it was his dedication to his religious convictions and his involvement with the temperance movement that actually sort of led him towards being the sort of captain of industry and the head of the travel industry that he became.
Wow. But the travel industry is so much about consumption of alcohol.
Well, we shall see. So in 1841, the year in question.
While the filibuster was happening.
At a juncture where the Industrial Revolution was reshaping societies, Cook made his first foray into his new venture. He was keen to spread the temperance message, and temperance meaning no drinking.
Yeah.
Boo. He organized a rail trip. So the very first package holiday was a rail trip for around 500 supporters, where they went from Leicester to a meeting in Loughborough.
Ah. Huh.
So.
A delightful journey.
Yes. I mean, fantastic. I mean, no, Loughborough is famous for many things, such as being the market center of a fertile agricultural district. And its main industries include electrical engineering, bell founding, and hosiery manufacture.
Ooh! City of industry.
So anyone that doesn't want or doesn't know about Loughborough, please make it your primary destination of choice for your holidays going forward. But little did he know, this seemingly innocuous 12-mile journey would birth the concept of package tours.
Wow.
And sow the seeds for this global travel empire that would become Thomas Cook. The rise and fall of Thomas Cook. So he was, you know, relentlessly driven. He was quite innovative, and he had a penchant for recognizing opportunity everywhere he went.
Okay.
So, for example, he invented the notion of vouchering, specifically hotel vouchers, where he would sell them to people who could use them in lieu of money for stays at hotels and, you know, getting food and drinks and that kind of stuff.
Well, he invented the gift voucher.
He basically invented the travel, well, the travel voucher.
I thought that was okay. Peter Coupon. Kind of
Peter Coupon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was Peter Coupon.
But like, and fun fact about gift cards, the reason why everyone loves gift cards is because approximately worldwide, 10% of gift cards are never reclaimed or accounted for. So it's basically free money.
Yeah,
for,
I buy
for,
that.
For the companies. Because, you know, you got a gift card, oh, you put it in a drawer, you never claim.
Yeah, or you it's like $20 and you spend exactly. 18 and you can't do the last
it's fantastic.
Two. Yeah.
So it's a great little money spinner. And Thomas Cook was right about it. So his, he was quite a devout man. Moral compass was shaped by his religious beliefs and
by his experience in bustling Loughborough
and by bustling Loughborough and you know, it wasn't just about profit for him. It was a medium to spread this moral educational message of temperance, which continues to this day in travel agencies. And Thomas Cook took this to heart with all those lads tours to Ibiza and Turkey. Very temperate for sure.
Did Thomas Cook go bankrupt? You might get there.
We might. But with every new venture comes challenges and rivals. So Cook's endeavors were groundbreaking, and they really were for the time, you know, just like this, you know, this bulk group thing to go forth. But, you know, I mean, I guess the concept of traveling was like totally new.
Yeah.
Totally new. People never traveled up until this point. They've commuted, sure. They've perambulated or maybe at a stretch journeyed.
Ooh.
But they never traveled.
They never traveled. They only journeyed to the coast to take in the sea air but they never for their traveled. Consumption.
But with any groundbreaking endeavor comes skepticism and competition. He had competitors spring up around him. They saw this business model as, you know, eminently, you know, just reproducible. So Thomas Cook expanded his operations, hitting much more further afield destinations, such as the exotic Knaresborough with its beautiful viaduct.
Ooh, very love nice. A viaduct.
Burford with its famous three-arched medieval bridge.
Is that from whence the hens?
Yes.
Okay.
So what did he do with the bridge?
He just expanded his tours to go to see there. Come see the bridge.
I've been to see that bridge.
Yeah, I know. Was it a Thomas Cook holiday? You didn't experience
the real thing. No, I just was driving through Burford.
Was it a train where people weren't allowed to drink?
Or even to the beautiful Avebury with its mysterious Silbury Hill? Which is
basically, it's interesting because like all his trips are now basically like trips that middle-aged, middle-class people go on for on a Saturday when they've got nothing better to do if they live in Wiltshire, Oxfordshire area.
You're speaking like a man that hasn't witnessed the majesty of Silbury Hill. Which is referred to as
Britain. I have. I've been to all these places on for a Saturday
as
walk.
Britain's pyramid.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never been to any of them, so
we should go on a trip.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Silbury Hill.
So all these other travel agencies and operators arose and they aped this business model and they undercutted or smeared the name of these perfectly good towns. Like, oh, why would you go to Silbury? It's full of like trash people
hills.
And stuff. Exactly. They also had skeptics who were like, you know, the idea of package holidays are, you know, was this novelty and his vision was like, you know, making it accessible to the masses. You know, these traditionalists that they thought that like they didn't believe in the feasibility of his business model and it depersonalized this sort of like, you know, spoiling the natural wonder of discovering the beauty of English's towns and various, you know, bridge-related architecture type things themselves.
Hey, so you guys have good bridges. I get it.
He was poo-pooed. Like, he really was. But he was very, very successful. And, like, economies of scale, he was able to do it quite well. He does, unfortunately, go on to die. I am sorry, Thomas Cook, not immortal.
Well, obviously. Immortal. What do you mean?
Well, I thought maybe he would be our second immortal on the show after, of course, Will Blythe.
He dies in 1892 and he's buried in Leicester's Welford Roads Cemetery. And there's a statue of him outside Leicester's railway station to this day.
Okay.
You know, it's just a testament to the what he did like for Leicester, Loughborough and all these other places. But
those booming towns.
Thomas Cook, the business itself, would go on and flourish for hundreds of years.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yes, hundreds of years, yes. And it's, as a brand and holiday business, you know, he lived
more
in the
100, fewer than 200.
So his legacy endured, influenced travel practices well into the 21st century.
Yeah.
Although there was a minor glitch when the company collapsed.
Okay.
In 2019.
Yeah. Oh, it was pre-pandemic.
Yes.
Oof.
Headline news.
Okay.
And the legacy just kind of crumbled before everyone's eyes.
And a bunch of lads got like stuck in Ibiza, right?
Yes. So we'll cover that. So September 2019, the end of the 178-year-old business. Several factors led to this collapse. For example,
the main one being they were trying to run a low-cost travel agent from physical locations.
That was part of it. I mean, a really big part is that they were £1.7 billion in debt,
which is
not great for business, I would say. Customers were doing things online and not going to brick and mortars, for example. And like their business model was like, oh, we'll have a brick and mortar in every town. It's very expensive when people just log on and just like,
yeah,
whatever. There's, you know, economic uncertainty, external events, for example, like there's the coup in Turkey, which is one of their main destinations.
Of course.
They had an extremely hot summer. Like all this kind of stuff just working against them. They had bad mergers and acquisitions.
And they wouldn't let people drink.
Yeah, no.
And they didn't react at all to the internet. Like it wasn't the coup in Turkey. It was...
It was.
Blame everything else.
But any business that acts in this way can always blame the final thing that happened to them.
There was many things building into it, but like, you know, it wasn't...
Yeah, the internet!
Okay, Turkey had its role to play too, though, okay? But when it did announce its collapse, it left around 600,000 travellers stranded worldwide, which led to the UK's most massive peacetime repatriation ever.
Wow.
So, like, shy of Dunkirk, this was, like, most epic get the Brits back home, except they were loutish and drunk instead.
Well.
But so that's basically Thomas Cook. He invented the modern travel agents. It was a massive institution and unfortunately collapsed due to Turkey.
And it was Turkey's fault.
Complete
Not
nonsense.
That he was flying 737s from Loughborough to Leicester.
Everyone should go to Avebury, though.
Okay. Avebury.
Yeah, it is pretty great.
Okay. I'm back from Avebury, and I am going to tell you about a bookkeeper murder mystery.
Bookkeeper murder mystery.
Yeah, bookkeeper.
When you talk now, I just think about syllables and word length.
Well, try to count all of these.
I will.
Today I'm telling this strange...
Two, four. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done.
Are you?
Yes.
The strange tale of John Caldwell Colt. Mm. He was born in Connecticut in 1810, where most strange tales originate. And he was the brother of Samuel Colt, the founder of Colt.
Oh, the weapon, gun people.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Colt revolver, Colt 45, all that sort of stuff.
And male horses.
And Samuel Colt invented the male horse. That is true. Up until then, they had been spontaneously reproducing. John Colt was not as successful as his brother. He tried his hand at many careers, which previous episodes have taught me is like usually a warning sign that a person is not going to end well.
I feel so attacked having tried my hand at so many careers at this stage.
Like, as soon as I wrote that, I thought, wait, how many careers have you had? Like, way too many.
My music is coming along just well. Thank you.
Well, among the things that John Colt got up to in his 20s were riverboat gambler.
Is that a career?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Well, a failed career.
What? So they're gambling on. So they're on the boats.
Or are they gambling? Oh, I bet three riverboats.
No, they're right, racing riverboats. This is a thing in America because gambling is illegal in most places.
Of course. Except so on boats.
On some boats, because you're on the water, gambling is legal because you're not in a state.
So wait, the rivers don't belong to states. They're federal land or something, or federal waterways.
It'll be something like that. Okay, yeah. So in Kansas City, where I grew up, there are riverboat casinos on the water.
Governance is so weird.
That's also why there are lots of casinos on Native American reservations.
Well, yeah,
because that's separate. That's not federal land, so they can do what they want.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, America continues to be hilarious. So John Colt tried his hand at being a riverboat gambler, a fur trader, a land speculator in Texas, a soap manufacturer in New York.
What's a land? Is that like, yeah, I reckon that's land.
That over there? I'm going to say land. Yep,
marsh.
Exactly.
Damn, I lost out again.
Well, let's get off the riverboat. A soap manufacturer in New York, a grocery wholesaler in Georgia, a dry goods merchant in Florida, and then my two favorite, an organizer of Mardi Gras celebrations in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
And the debate coach for the University of Vermont.
Wow.
So this guy
is super eclectic.
All over the place.
What's his name again?
John Colt.
John Colt.
John Colt.
Great name.
But then, after all of these failed careers, he hit upon his life's work. Double entry bookkeeping.
Nice.
The way you said that sounds quite naughty.
Well, you know I like a clean ledger.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds so rude.
Well, that's right. While John Colt was teaching in Kentucky, he gave lectures on Italian bookkeeping, which is just when you have a ledger that has two columns, one for assets and one for liabilities. He published a textbook, the concisely named The Italian Science of Double Entry Bookkeeping, Simplified, Arranged, and Methodized. And I'm told this textbook received very good reviews.
It sounds riveting.
Yes. Unfortunately, things were about to take a turn for Mr. Colt. On September 17th, 1841, a New York printer named Samuel Adams went to collect a debt that he was owed for some textbooks that he had printed for Colt. And just as a sidebar, as far as I can tell, this man has no relation to the Samuel Adams of Boston
Beer
Lager
and
or American Revolution fame. Just another Adams.
It's a common name.
It's a common name. Yeah. It's my name, actually. Yes, that's right.
I thought your middle name was Cheese.
Yes, I am related to Philly. Anyway, Sam Adams and John Colt disagreed about what the actual debt was. And the discrepancy that they were squabbling about was $1.35. Which, while that might have been a lot of money back then, is probably not worth it for what happens next.
Like, how much in today's terms? It's probably like 100 quid or something, maybe?
Yeah, maybe more, but like...
Not like a huge, like...
Yeah, it's not millions.
I'm assuming it gets ridiculous now, what happens.
It does, because according to Colt, Adams started choking him with his cravat. And in self-defense, Colt reached for what he thought was a hammer, but was actually a hatchet.
Oh, wow.
Either way,
it's not
great.
But this is exactly why I wear elastic cravats.
Exactly. Like quick release cravats. Yeah. Colt strikes Adams 4 or 5 times. Adams falls to the floor. Oof. Dead.
I mean, yeah. And also after the first swing, you'd know it's not a...
Yeah. And like, I don't... Like, it wouldn't have been better if it were a hammer.
No,
you're still going to brain this dude.
Yeah.
So the next morning... Giant question mark. Really unclear what he did between killing the guy and this. But the next morning, Colt wraps the body in a store awning, binds it with rope, places it into a large shipping crate, and packs the crate with salt. He addressed the crate to a non-existent address in New Orleans and hired a man named Barstow to deliver it to a ship called the Kalamazoo, which was going to set sail the next morning. And he cleaned up the blood also. That is important to say, I guess.
How much salt do you need? I don't know. A crate's worth minus a body?
Yeah, for like a human body-sized crate's worth.
25 kilograms.
God.
That is not surprising. Yeah. He knows this.
Well, within a few days, Adam's family and colleagues, you know, start to advertise the fact that he's gone missing. They place notices, and Colt actually visits Adam's shop to ask about the status of his textbooks and asks where Adam's is. And one of Adam's colleagues says, well, actually, I mean, the last time we saw the guy was when he was on his way to your shop.
In an awning wrapped in rope.
Yeah. And Colt just like doesn't reply and basically Homer hedges out of the store and just like runs away.
Yeah.
Like, well, clearly I didn't kill him because I went to ask about where he was. But meanwhile, God. Adam's family has pieced together some of the clues, like the last time they saw him, he was going to this guy's shop. And apparently somebody had seen Colt like scrubbing the floor or bending over a body, all these sort of maybe questionable eyewitnesses. Mm. But basically, the Adam's family tracked down the man who drove the crate to New Orleans and located the Kalamazoo. Unfortunately for John Colt, the ship hadn't left port yet due to bad weather, so the authorities are able to board the ship and find the crate in the cargo hold.
Wait, where was the ship going to go?
It was in New Orleans. It's not clear to me where it was going to go.
But it was just going to go out to sea, then presumably they're going to like dump the body out at sea or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not sure that he thought that part through. I think he was just like, let's get it on the boat, and then like...
Once things are on boats,
not my problem, they disappear anymore.
Had he put a return to sender address on there, then he...
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big mistake.
And apparently the crate, the decomposing body, was emitting a strong odor, as decomposing bodies do. But the crew thought it was just rat poison. It was like the very pungent smell of rat poison and not like a dead body. But a dead body it was, and Colt was arrested. So the case becomes a sensation in the New York press, and it's hot on the heels of this other murder, which was called the Beautiful Cigar Woman murder. Yeah, so it's just like a...
Why did you do that, Will?
Yeah. She just wanted to sell you some Cohibas.
I did my time for that. I don't want to talk about it.
You're a change man.
So it's a sensation, and people are obsessed with it, and it goes to trial in 1842. For a while, the prosecutors try to argue that Colt shot Adams with one of the actual, like, Colt family revolvers, which would have been a fun twist. But then Samuel Colt himself comes into court to disprove this by firing a gun and catching the bullets with his hands.
That didn't happen.
Apparently what? It did. Yeah, I think he did it at, like, really close range. So he was saying it wouldn't have enough force to penetrate his skull. And actually, the dent that they found in the guy's skull was from a nail that Colt used to shut the crate. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. I think we should reopen this Colt case.
We should reopen the case. Colt admits that he killed Adams, but he maintained that it was in self-defense. But he also said that his first thought after he did it was to burn the whole building down to destroy the evidence. And the jury is apparently very disturbed by Colt's, quote, stoic, unremorseful, and callous demeanor when he described how he disposed of the body.
Oh,
and the judge said that his behavior was not typical of an innocent man. Colt is found guilty of willful murder and sentenced to hanging.
Wow.
And while he waited for his execution date, he was in New York City's infamous prison called the Tombs. And apparently while he was there, he lived quite luxuriously, quote, receiving daily visits from friends and family, smoking Cuban cigars, sleeping in an actual bed instead of a mound of straw, and wearing silk dressing gowns inside and a sealskin overcoat for his daily walks in the prison yard.
Why was he so luxurious?
Unclear. I guess he's from a prominent family, so they had the guards money.
Or whatever. Yeah.
But he dined on meals, including quail on toast, game pâtés, reed birds, and ortolans, which are that like tiny swallow that you eat whole.
Really bird-based like diet.
Yeah.
All the birds you want. Penguin, ostrich, whatever you want. We got it. You're posh. You can do it.
You got a bird guy. He'll hook you up. Whatever you want. Oh,
please, no beef.
I just want a burger. What's that, a burger? Oh, no, what you want is an ostrich.
Well, several attempts were made to break him out of prison by disguising him in women's clothing, but they were all foiled, and in prison he remained. A doctor comes to visit Colt, claiming that he could resuscitate Colt after the hanging because his neck was so thick that strangulation would be impossible, provided that he didn't hang there too long. I'm seeing...
He had such a thick neck.
Such a thick neck that they're like, you...
Do you know what? I have just thought hang in this though before. Like, you know when nice. You see someone who's got like basically no neck, it's just like head yeah. on shoulders.
You think, how do they hang really that thick. Guy?
Like, do you never just think sometimes like... You'd be fine.
In Louis's court,
you'd be all right. If you were like if you were a posh guy in France, you'd be fine.
You'd be fine.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have been a posh guy in France without a neck. Those people were very into necks.
They were very willowy.
Yeah, they loved
very neck based society.
A slender neck.
Or a hamster aristocrat.
Hamster. Or our new mole overlords.
We will famously never guillotine you, our overlords.
We couldn't if we wanted to.
Even if we tried.
They really have progressed a lot from Wessex.
They've learned, haven't they?
They've evolved.
Well, much like our mole overlords, Colt was unable to be hanged, apparently. So his friends put the doctor up in a hotel nearby so they could bring Colt to him after the hanging in the hopes that he could actually resuscitate him. Colt also asked to be allowed to marry a woman named Caroline Henshaw before he's executed. They'd been living together. It's possible they were like common law married. And the authorities say yes. And so on the morning of November 14th, Colt and Henshaw are married. But a few hours later, before the execution, a fire breaks out in the prison. And after they extinguish the fire, they find Colt's body in his cell, having stabbed himself in the heart with a knife.
Oh. Oh,
wow. Okay.
So that is the end of the tale. Or is it?
Is it?
Because, of course, people come up with a theory that Colt actually killed another prisoner and escaped during the fire. And there are all these eyewitnesses from people in California like a decade later saying that they saw him.
Yeah, yeah.
He was still
it's
going to
be part of like the pop culture
sort
of then at the time or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But apparently, private detectives followed Caroline Henshaw around for decades and never found any evidence of John Colt. So it is all just a
It would have been pretty hard to pull off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it would have been hard. Although he had the bird guy. I mean, he had access to the finest.
Well, if you got
birds.
A bird.
It's just an ostrich with a beard.
Exactly. And so that is just the strange tale of John Colt and Samuel
It
Adams.
Couldn't have been an ostrich if you think about it, because they are the most benecked of birds.
They do. Most benecked compared to this stub-necked man. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know who's going to die in a hanging? An ostrich.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's the first to go.
That's the first
Penguins,
to go.
They can hang for
they're
days.
Fine.
also, because they're flightless.
What are they going to do? They can't flap their way out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, true. You can't hang a bird, really, can you?
However, they are quite tall. Your scaffold would have to have some real height on
their
it.
Their feet would just hit the ground, wouldn't they?
Are they taller than humans?
Ostriches?
Yeah, they're 35 they're feet tall.
At birth. No, and then
they
continue
like
to grow.
Are they 6 foot tall or something?
No, they're pretty, I think like I six
know.
To
don't
eight.
Look at me. I'm not like the ostrich. What do you think I know about that? How much do you think I know about ostriches?
Okay. For all our ostriches that are listening, the tallest of you, please write into us. And let us know.
Common ostrich height. 2.1 to 2.8 meters for a male adult.
That's like 9 feet.
1.7 to 2 meters for a female
adult.
It's
like 7 feet.
I'm 1.74, so I'm basically the size
I'm
of a
1.96.
female ostrich. And my neck is identical.
It is. You have such a willowy neck.
Yeah.
You. Every time I look at you, I think French aristocrat.
Yeah, slender as hell.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. That's everything you will ever need to know or ever will know about the year 1841.
Yes, that's right. If we ever find out that you've learned anything else
you've
about
learned
1841,
one more
I
fact.
Swear to God, we'll sick
only
the mole people
things.
On you.
But before we go into booting up the random number generator, we just want to say a sincere thank you to everyone that listens to us. We get a great crack out of doing this. And also a special thank you to our beloved, benevolent patrons, our board members.
Mm.
And so you too can be a board member if you go to our Patreon and help support us. And we only do this because you're able to donate a little bit of cashola, Kashish.
Spondoolies.
Spondoolies.
Yeah. And I guarantee that if you become a board member, you'll never be a board member.
Hey.
That's absolutely
and
right.
I've been ramping up my like contributions to the Patreon, so you get little extra tidbits here and there. You get ad-free listening.
We actually haven't played a game in the League of Lies for a long time.
Yeah, we should put another thing on there. We'll put another thing on. But thank you very much. Yeah, you go to patreon.com/randomlyhistory. If you'd like to contribute, it does help cover the costs
and
of everything.
There's a free little snippet membership you can get to as well. So just
and we'd like to especially give a shout out to the following board members.
Yes,
Shelley.
Oh, Shelley. She is as intelligent as she is beautiful,
And she's neither.
Maybelline.
Maybe she's
she
born with it.
She is absolutely born with it. She is totally worth it.
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
What are you reading right now?
I'm reading the name of
the
Patreon members.
Are these names of famous
horses?
He
or she is sweet.
Vanity.
Vanity?
Vanity. FIFA Trixabel.
War Admiral.
Yeah. All noble.
Secretariat.
Beautiful, wonderful people.
Moon Unit.
What the hell are you saying?
Oh, these are Frank Zappa's children.
This is emmasdiary.co.uk. Weird girls' names.
Oh.
Right, okay. Yeah. So to our actual
Otter.
Board... to our actual board members, thank you.
Sunday
to whoever,
Molly.
I take back my thanks to whoever Will was just mentioning. I thought...
you know what? I'm just going to put us all out of our misery, Trixabel and Moon Unit included, because I see the random number generator beeping angrily at me. And if I'm not mistaken, and I know I'm not trained to do this, but I do believe there's a ticker tape coming out of it.
What?
Oh my goodness me. Yes, this is absolutely right. There is a ticker tape coming out, which can only mean one thing. It means that someone on the board has asserted their rights.
It was probably Maybelline.
I think you must. Maybe. And the year in question for next week will be 1989.
Who told us to do this?
And who is this? This has come from which board member?
This is from our esteemed board member, Christine.
Ah, Christine. Real name, genuinely.
Real name, Christine. Yes. And I happen to know that Christine has requested this year in the hopes that I will cover the birth of one Taylor Allison Swift.
No way.
Yeah. Incredible. So we'll see. We'll see if that's what how
Christine strikes me as a woman of culture.
She is.
Of intellect, of power. She strikes me as mighty.
She is. She is mighty is the word I would use to describe her.
And if you want to buy my
admiration,
you can do this on our Patreon.
Patreon.com/randomlyhistory. Thank you very much. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks, Christine.
We look forward to covering that.
We're very excited. We love the 80s.
Right, until next time.
Toodlepip.
Bye.
Bye.
God save them all.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.